WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Louise Coogan with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, November 14th. Matt Gaetz was named by President-elect Donald Trump as his Attorney General. The U.S. Representative from North Florida was re-elected last week by a landslide. Gaetz is also currently the subject of an ongoing conservative-led House Ethics Committee investigation regarding sexual misconduct allegations. Gaetz was reportedly investigated by the U.S. Justice Department over allegations that he had sexual relations with a 17-year-old girl and paid for her travel. He said he was the victim of a former Justice Department official trying to shake him down. The Justice Department ultimately decided not to charge him. Gaetz received a Juris Doctor from the William & Mary Law School in 2007, and he was admitted to the Florida Bar a year later. He briefly worked as an attorney with a law firm in Northwest Florida before he was elected to serve in Florida's House in 2010. Trump named another Floridian, Senator Marco Rubio, as Secretary of State. A Sarasota County Planning Commission meeting scheduled for Thursday next week is prompting significant attention among slow development activists. Texas-based home builder D.R. Horton is asking the county for a rezone of 26 acres of agricultural land to build a 170-home subdivision right across from the celery fields, a protected area. The Audubon Society, which operates a birding center at the preserve, is opposing the project. During Hurricane Debbie, the land was completely flooded. The Planning Commission meeting is scheduled for 5 p.m. next Thursday at South County Administration Center in Venice to discuss the D.R. Horton request. In 2023, the year that followed Florida's initial 15-week abortion ban, the state saw an increase in the number of infants who died from fatal birth defects before celebrating a first birthday. Infant mortality attributed to congenital anomalies in Florida jumped to its highest level in at least 6 years in October of last year. That's a little over a year after the state's initial abortion ban went into effect. This has been Louise Coogan with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, November 14th.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Well, that news report is apropos to exactly what we are discussing on The Detail today. In the House is Sarah Reisinger, who is the president of Audubon. She is an attorney. And this is, oh, you're not. Okay, why did I think that, Sarah? See, I gave you a degree. Anyway, Sarah's in the House, president of Audubon. John O. Miller is here with me, which is very fortuitous given the topic. I know you'll have a lot to add. And we're in the middle of our fund drive. We just kicked it off yesterday, so we will be asking all of you to support WSLR, to give us some love here. We need your help.
That's right, Kathy. We're in a situation where between the state government and local county commission, the county commission cut about $27,000 that we had been getting, and up in Tallahassee, they cut $40,000. So we have a big gap to make up from the community.
Yeah, we sure do. And I have some people to thank before we kick off this discussion. We're going to be talking about D.R. Horton's application to build 179 homes in what is currently zoned as rural open-use rural farmland, 49 acres. Sarah, you are going to be sharing with our listeners what's going on with that super important topic. But before we get there, Peter Burkhart from Sarasota, thank you so much for your donation. We appreciate it. And Kevin Visse, Kenneth Visse. I hope I'm getting your name right, of Sarasota. Thank you so much for joining us at the friend level. Everybody, please give us a call at the station, or you can go online. The number for the station is
941-894-6469.
Okay, and then WSLR.org. So, Sarah Riesinger, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're going to ask you to pull your mic closer, okay, about a fist away, so it's easy to hear you. Sarah, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're the president of Audubon. Have you, you know, how did that happen? What's your professional background? How long have you lived here?
That's a very good question. I have lived in the area since 1987, since I was 8 years old. And I have lived about a mile from Celery Fields for the last over 10 years. So I have a lot of experience with Celery Fields specifically. I actually lived in this area, left for about 10 years, was an international buyer, traveled all over the world, came back here to raise my family, and like I said, we've been living right off down the street from Celery Fields, and I take my kids there, and as the years have gone on, I've gotten more interested in the wildlife in the area. You know, I always lived right off Palmasola Bay, and I would see all of the birds and the manatees coming in, and you know, when you're a kid, you're like, oh, Mom, do we have to go see nature? You know, like, it's not as enjoy. As you get older, you want to be in nature and you want to enjoy that experience more. And that's really been the case for me. And I really want my children to be able to experience those things. So Jean Duby, who has been a wonderful resource for our community for a really long time, has been the president of Audubon off and on for over 20 years now, needed to step down this year. She's actually on a wonderful cruise birding in Australia right now. And she didn't have anyone that really wanted to step up. And I had started volunteering at the Audubon. And I have a lot of experience in business and running organizations. So I felt like I could step in and fill the hole that she's been filling for that organization. Yeah, and I met with her.
She's been a great leader.
She's amazing. She's a wonderful mentor to have. And that's really how it came about, just because there was no one on the board who really wanted to take that role. So I stepped in, and mostly because I just care so much about this space. And I have recently gotten into birding. I'm not a birder. I'm more of a bird enthusiast who's learning more and more and more every day. I'm slowly converting into a full-blown birder.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it doesn't take much. One of the things, because I'm a birder, and the thing I really enjoy about it, and we've traveled for that specific reason. My husband's from Brazil, and we've gone to the Pantanal, where you can see at the Celery Fields a lot of the same birds that people go to the Pantanal to see. The level of birding there is that fabulous. But for me, the thing about birding is you're completely in the moment.
Yes.
You are completely in the present. And God knows in our busy world, we need to recalibrate ourselves sometimes to be fully in the moment. So it provides that opportunity. So tell us, you know, you've described on the Audubon page that the Celery Fields stormwater management is a crowning achievement. This is an application to put 179 homes right next to the Celery Fields, number one. Number two, this land during Debbie, our most recent huge flood, during 1992, the no-name storm, 1962, Jono, you pointed out before the show, this place routinely floods in a major way. So 179 homes. You're calling the Celery Fields a crowning achievement. Can you speak to why it's a crowning achievement? And let's get into concerns about this application.
Well, they knew that the Philippi Creek River Basin was flooding, specifically in 62, like you mentioned, and 92. We were losing homes along Philippi Creek when the rains would come, and there was really no control upriver to stop that from happening. So they took what has historically always been a very low-lying area. It was a celery farm. The only thing that could really grow there well was celery because it was, prior to that, a sawgrass marsh.
It was a wetland to begin with.
So celery thrived because it needs a very wet environment to grow. So they took this celery farm and converted it into a series of ponds with dikes and levees surrounding it. I am not a stormwater expert, but I don't know specifically how it works. But what I do know is that it has prevented a lot of the flooding downstream.
In the Philippi Creek Basin.
We did see some during Debbie because the rain was so extreme. But the flooding actually at Celery Fields was much more extreme because it was being held back in these stormwater ponds that were developed. So the hill that you see at Celery Fields, if you've ever been out there, there's a large hill.
Some call it Mount Sarasota.
Mount Celery. It's 70 feet high. It is made of all the earth that had been taken out of the stormwater ponds. While they were doing this, Gene was partnering extensively with the county to let them know this really is an amazing birding site. There are as many recorded species of birds at Celery Fields as you can see at Myakka River State Park. So in that really small footprint, you're getting a diverse...
It's 249 species. But the thing to know is they weren't there when celery was being grown there.
So when they began Celery Fields, so they decided to make it a wetland. That's where I was getting. There were over 100.
Back.
So, Gene had documented over 100 species of birds at the time. They restored it back to a wetland in the southern portion south of Palmer Road, where this development is going to be occurring. And we had the stilts come in and start nesting. You saw the gallinules come in and start nesting. And I think it started with 5 nesting pairs of each of these species. And you can see them in abundance today there. You know, every day, even in storms, like we're getting very exciting species there. Yesterday I saw a tropical kingbird, which is native to Central and South America, and it blew in on a storm. And they come to Celery Fields as a refuge. And it's just a special place in that it has such diverse flora there for the birds to. You have wading species in the wetlands. They have planted trees around, so the warblers are attracted.
So, you know, the county put a $5 million investment into creating this stormwater management, which became a major birding site.
We actually estimated around $50 million of total investment.
Really?
Between the digging the ponds, rewilding, building the boardwalks, parking lots, the restroom that's there. We added that all up. It was about $50 million in total public fund investment.
So why is it a problem? And John, I'll please chime in. Why is it a problem to put 179 homes? Because you've got to, you know, why should anybody care that there are going to be 179 homes? Or I should say, this is a proposal. They are not entitled to do this. It is farmland. It is zoned as farmland. It requires permission. So it's not as if the owner has a right to sell to a builder. They need the government to approve this. Maybe, Jonna, why is it a problem
to put 179 homes? I think it's a problem because the they have a future land use designation that suggests it could be higher density. I think if it stayed a farm, it would be fine. But the owners will argue that they had an expectation of being able to develop it more intensively.
No, I'm saying, okay, but my question is, why are people against this? What is the basis? And
So I think the biggest thing being birds and bird watchers need quiet because the birds communicate with one another. That's how bird watchers spot where the birds are going to be. It's also how birds communicate for safety.
Right.
It's also how they communicate for mating and nesting. When you have really loud noises like that come with construction or increased traffic, the numbers that they're suggesting are staggering for this little 2-lane road. The birds are going to be pushed either into more in towards the center, away from the viewing platforms that we currently have, or completely out of the area. And we're actually finding in areas like Ackerman Park where they had a lot of species of birds. Mm. They did construction near it. The construction ended. We now no longer have the diversity of species of birds at that location. It is yet to recover.
Where is that park?
It's directly adjacent to Celery Fields off Apex Road. It's a pond area that used to have over 170 species of birds. But since the construction has ended, we've only documented about 60 species of birds.
So it started with birds, and what's happened in the wake of Debbie is a realization that, you know, a lot of our residents don't remember the 62 flood, they don't remember the 92 flood, but now that Debbie's happened, people are waking up and saying, why are we allowing development in areas that we know are low and know will flood in the future?
And it's not, we can't call it a 100-year storm. This is, at least in that area, it's a 30-year certainty, right? That at least 30 years, but we know it's also getting worse.
Yes, it's getting worse. And so this is an opportunity for the county commission to rethink things. And there are other developments near the Myakka that are being proposed that are also in the floodplain. And so this should all lead to a big reconsideration based on the flooding alone.
Yeah, I want to stop and thank some of you who have called in to donate. Thank you to Ted and Kathleen Halloran of Bradenton for your impactful donation at the partner level. You're helping independent radio and Sarasota's favorite listening room not just survive but thrive. We appreciate you. Guy DeLillo of Sarasota, you donated at the friend level, supporting everything. Thank you so much, Guy. Michael Vercelli of Sarasota, you donated at the listener level in support of the Blue Groove, Blues and Bluegrass, Daddy-O's Collector's Corner, Folk Alley, WSLR News, Counterspin, Tom Hartman Report. There's a man with a lot of favorites, right?
He needs the detail.
Yeah, right. And thank you to Anonymous for your $20 donation. Please go online to WSLR.org. We need your help. You can donate online or you can call the studio at 941-894-6469. That's 941-894-6469.
And let me just, for people that are going to the website, it's pretty simple. You go to WSLR.org, you click on the donate button. That's going to be pretty obvious. You choose an amount and fill out your contact information. This is when you need to pay attention. Click on News and Public Affairs, and then there's a drop-down menu, and choose the detail. And that way, Kathy's show will get credit for that donation.
Thank you, John. Oh, thanks. Although we're share and share alike here, but it does, yeah, it's nice to get support for the show. The photograph, I think, Debbie, because like the storm in 1992, it was called the no-name storm. We're not talking about a hurricane, right? I'm not sure. Was there a name for the storm in 62, Jono?
No, I don't think so.
Maybe they were naming storms back then. And then Debbie hit us. It was not classified as a hurricane when Debbie came along and we saw amazing flooding. So post-Debbie, which was in early August, Tom Matrullo, who is a friend of the station, and he's on the board here. He also heads up the Sarasota Citizen Action Network, which is about planning issues, land use issues. He's on the board there. He took a photograph of the farm site, which is proposed, right, for these 170 homes. And it was completely underwater, like not a little bit. Right?
No, about three feet.
3 feet.
Yeah.
Honestly, if I were a buyer, there is no amount of reassurance you could give me. If I saw that photo, there's no way I would buy there.
I think a big problem, too, is it's out-of-state buyers that come in, right? They don't know the history of the area. They see a new neighborhood, and they think it's a great opportunity, and they don't know what they're getting into. And the people that are living in the neighborhoods around there become very concerned. Like, I have friends that live in those adjacent neighborhoods, and they're scared, frankly.
Well, and one of the things is, And I honestly think the awareness has only started happening relatively recently, you know, with a lot of this flooding. Certainly traffic, you know, there's been concern, but it's with this kind of a development, they'll bring in a lot of dirt to lift the profile, right? The baseline elevation. They'll bring in a lot of fill dirt with the thinking that that's going to mitigate or eliminate flooding problems. But often, first of all, that doesn't necessarily happen, but it may be creating flooding problems for the neighbors, right?
Well, once you go over, they only are required to contain that 10 inches in 24 hours. And that standard was set during the 1992 storm that came through. This has not been reevaluated by the county at any point. Mm. So once they go over that 10 inches, that water's going somewhere. Once we hit the 10 inches that they were required to hold, they're not planning for more typically. Mm-hmm. So it's going somewhere.
And, you know, that standard, 10 inches in 24 hours, Jono, if you can chime in on this, because I know you know, is that a reasonable standard anymore? If that's what, so in other words, developers have to show, or the county has to plan with its infrastructure to be able to contain 10 inches of rain in 24 hours. It seems like we're in a new reality. That doesn't really work anymore.
Well, yeah, and I think the big problem is it depends on the antecedent conditions. If we're in a drought and you get 10 inches of rain, that's going to fall in a basin. Wetlands are going to fill up. It's going to take a while for those impacts to be felt. But if it rained 8 inches the day before and now it rains 4 inches, you're in trouble. So just having this narrow window that we're looking at doesn't make a lot of sense. There should be a way to incorporate how full the system is. People dig these stormwater ponds and act like, well, the flow is going to go into... Well, once the storm, that's like some Zen Buddhist thing. Like once the cup is full, you can't add more to it.
Uh-huh.
So that's the problem, is that... The other problem is that once you've reached the 10 inches, and what happens next? If it keeps raining, what are people supposed to do?
Right.
There's no plan B.
And so to your point, let's say you have a wet summer, right? And I think this pretty much was what happened with Debbie. The ground was already saturated, right?
Yes.
So we did have a storm in June that flooded St. Armand Circle. It was referred to as a 100-year storm, right? Mm-hmm. And it didn't have a name at all. And it didn't become a hurricane, but because there was a drought, it flooded some areas, but that was kind of limited, you know, in terms of its impact. With Debbie, the ground was saturated. So I don't know, Jono, do we need to rethink our standard, not just in terms of X amount of inches in 24 hours, but have a more prolonged standard, like what happens in a week, or let's look at the past 3 months, right?
Think we do. And the other problem is that even if your house pad is elevated, if your road is inundated and all your kids' toys floated away and your lawnmower had gas, you know, there's a lot of ancillary impacts that are beyond just whether your carpet got wet. Mm-hmm. So it's a problem.
It is a problem. Lauren Wanless, I believe, of Bradenton. You've just become an evergreen member at the friend level, $5 a month. Thank you so much. Every bit helps WSLR. Pamela Nolan of Englewood, thank you for joining us at the supporters level with your $10 a month evergreen membership. You support WSLR News, Democracy Now!, Justice Matters. Everybody, we are in the middle of our pledge drive. The number to call is 941-894-6469. You can also go online to wslr.org, hit the donate button, and if you would hit the drop-down box and choose the detail, that would be great to support this show. Jono, are there, and Sarah, I know Steve Swag gave, and he was the designer of the Celery Fields project. He did an amazing job. He's Sarasota's resident hydrology expert. Is there an effort to change that standard? Did he recommend changing the standard?
Yes, he's recommending a number of things, including, you know, the Laurel Meadows issue was precipitated by a dike failure. The county owns the dike, and it hadn't been inspected. There are other places in the state of Florida that mandate annual inspections of these dikes. So, yeah, he's going to have a bunch of recommendations. I just want to take a second to tell people why it's so important to support this show and WSLR. So we're here today talking about this. You just mentioned Steve Swa. We had Steve Swa on our Changing Environment show talking about flooding. Mm-hmm. We have WSLR News with Johannes Werner. He has interns. He's got volunteers. He has a part-time reporter. So if you're interested in local politics or what's happening in Sarasota, you need to be listening to these WSLR shows. And it goes beyond that because it's... Kathy points out, a lot of these national things we're looking at, like Moms for Liberty, Stop the Steal, privatization of public education, these are all Sarasota entities. This is the epicenter of weirdness. And so it's Kathy that's been doing the work to uncover, to talk about the dark money. She has podcasts, if you're interested in the earlier shows. So if you're going to listen to one show locally, the detail would be one to get.
Thank you, Jono. Thank you for that. And yeah, I do tell, it's funny, when things have broken nationally, I've had friends who, you know, I've chatted with, and they're like, how do I know this name? Wait a minute. I think Kathy was telling me about this. We are a bit of a petri dish when it comes to national trends. With efforts, I think it's that the root of most of it is privatization, you know, consolidating power, but also privatization. And WSLR is the place where we can dive into this information and get it out there. For whatever reason, I don't understand why the county pulled our funding. Do you know what that was about, Jono? Maybe they weren't so happy about this. This is why supporting WSLR is important. You know, we need independent journalism, and WSLR supports that independent journalism.
And don't be scared by the fact that it's low-power radio. If you can't get it over the air, you can get it online. You can listen to it while you're driving. And many of these shows are archived. And so you can go back and listen to the show where we had Steve Swa, and this show will be archived. So it's a tremendous resource, not only in the moment, but ongoing.
So I'd like to get into the nuts and bolts of this application. And for those of you who are concerned about flooding in Sarasota and the contribution of the county making good infrastructure decisions, this application from D.R. Horton is going to be considered at the November 21st Planning Commission meeting, which is the first step. The Planning Commission makes recommendations to the County Commission. So the outcome of the Planning Commission, their decision is a recommendation. It's not a final decision, but it's definitely a prequel, right? To what the county may or may not do. You're going to get to hear a lot of the arguments. You're going to get to hear the applicant, D.R. Horton, make their case. So I want to talk about buffers. You know, Audubon has come out, and you already manage, Audubon manages buffers between development and the celery fields. And what are they designed to do? And then can you tie it to this project? Why would you be concerned that buffers aren't going to do the job when it comes to this?
Well, the buffers that they've created, they are making a big deal of because they added some native plants to it. They did work with Gene to make it a little more extensive than it was. Mm-hmm. But honestly, if you're really looking at the plans, it's a glorified drainage ditch. It's really just a ditch with some native plants around it.
What's being proposed? Around the 170 homes.
Correct.
Okay.
So when we talk about this development, when you're looking at celery fields, it's the shape of a rectangle. And this is the bottom right corner. It's not next to celery fields. It is inset inside of celery fields.
Okay.
So because of the noise and light pollution issues that come with development and construction and all of that, we really do need buffer areas. And in fact, the county entrusted the Sarasota Audubon by giving us the quad parcels recently, and we've committed to investing $5 million to rewild those parcels because the county agreed it needed a buffer between the industrial zone and the park.
So we need to explain the quads. For those who remember the 2019 effort to preserve the celery fields, which was a huge local effort, there was proposed industrial development, waste transfer facility, which wound up being built, but not as close to the celery fields. It's the intersection of Apex and Palmer Boulevard.
Yes.
And all of the corners had empty space, which you're referring to as the quads, owned by the public.
Yes.
Owned by the county. And the county was looking at selling that land basically to the detriment of that $50 million investment in the celery fields to put in a restaurant supply place, to put in a waste transfer facility. The public had to galvanize and was successful in defeating that. Now we're talking about the other side on Palmer Road and Raymond Road, and that corner is being looked at. John, are you—
Well, so some deep background on this. When the county realized they should be buying this property, they went to the owner, and the owner said, well, I'll sell you the celery fields, but you got to buy all of it. And all of it included the four parcels that we're talking about as the quads. Mm-hmm. Well, the county, in its wisdom, and that's in quotes, had decided previously that a major employment center and business center would be really sensible to have next to the interstate. You could get off on an exit if you were shipping goods or receiving goods. Having these employment centers next to the interstate made perfect sense. What they didn't factor in was that this had been a wetland. And so they had created this land with all this value. They weren't buying it with the potential to be a different kind of farmland. They were buying it with the potential to be a major employment center or industrial. And so the county was anxious to get their money back, and they wanted to sell these, you know, somewhat higher lands. And so that's, they created, you know, the previous commissions had created this problem and created this pickle where they had all this value tied up. And this is what's haunting us with the with this D.R. Horton proposal. That land, it's fine if they said, look, can't grow celery anymore. You want to have some other ag there. Mm-hmm. But for God's sake, don't tell the community that this is suitable for a more intense residential development.
Exactly.
And that's what they did.
I think one of the things that's being missed here is the county seems to be missing the value in celery fields itself. Over the course of the last 20 years, we looked at last year, Visit Sarasota, and it's estimated that celery fields drives about $100 million plus in economic growth to the county each year,
like visitors
that are coming. This is our biggest resource in Sarasota.
Yeah.
People are coming here to see wildlife. 3% of the people are coming to celery fields. Based on the $42 billion that we drove in tourism, that equates to, you know, $100 million plus that celery fields is accounting for. That's where the value of this space is.
Yeah, Sarasota has an impressive portfolio of environmental attractors that are the Rodney Dangerfields of Visit Sarasota's portfolio. They don't get respect, honestly.
Right.
You know, and that's really what's at issue here. And just bringing it back to the quads, and I want to encourage my listeners out there, people galvanized around those quads. It made a difference. And my educated opinion, having looked at all the dark money and the dynamics of politics here in Sarasota, shout out to then Commissioner Paul Caragiulo, who was the swing vote, in my opinion, that killed making the quads, allowing the quads become industrial uses. Caragiulo went against his power base, you know, the people that helped him get elected, and he voted it down to make the quads industrial. Now, what did he get for that? Well, he got my appreciation. I think a lot of people appreciate, not enough, maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. However, and this is where my educated opinion comes in, I think he was sat down, he got a sit down by that power base, and they told him, don't bother to run again, dude, because we will go after you. He did not do what they told him to. And then, so he declined to run again. And instead, who ran? Christian Ziegler. okay? And Mr. Ziegler, in my educated opinion, Mr. Ziegler's going to do what they tell him to do. And he did. Interestingly, he didn't run again. And that's a whole nother topic. I want to thank Brian Ellis. Thank you for your $25 donation. You supported my show, The Detail. Thank you so much. And John O's show. We deeply appreciate you. Steve Frumkin, you donated $150 and you love everything. You love the variety. You love Daddy. We all love Daddy-O. Daddy-O is like a special man here. And Discovery Road. So Steve Frumkin, thank you so much for your donation. I bring this up because people should take heart that their voices on this really do matter. The tourism aspect of the Celery Fields is huge. And if you haven't been there, if you live here and you haven't gone to the Celery Fields, I got to tell you, you're missing out. This is a world premiere, a truly world-class. We throw that term around in Sarasota a lot. The Celery Fields is truly a world-class wildlife destination where you can see just gorgeous birds.
Over 100,000 people a year visit Celery Fields from all 50 states. In our Nature Center, we have a little map where people put where they have come from, and over all 50 states were represented last year. We start the map over each year. We have naturalists at both boardwalks on Palmer and Raymond Road. So if you're new to birding or you're just interested in what's out there, there's somebody there to help you every day. And that's something very unique to Celery Fields. Most parks don't have educators on site.
Yeah, you have an on-site visitor center, adequate parking. I've never been there when I felt crowded out. Even, you know, it's kind of a beautiful, steady flow, but the birds aren't disrupted. So everybody, if you're just joining me, you're listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2024-25 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. My guest today is Sarah Reisinger. She is the president of Audubon, the Audubon Society here in Sarasota. And John O'Miller is in the house. His show, Our Changing Environment, is also here on WSLR. We are in the middle of our pledge drive, our fund drive. You can call the station at 941-894-6469 or go to WSLR.org and donate. We need your help. I want to pull back a bit because if you're the owner of farmland and developers are coming to you with multi-million dollar offers, right? It is a huge, totally understandable temptation, right, to sell your property. Now, you do need the permission of the county to change the land use. But there are communities, and I believe this started in New Jersey, that saw, hey, we have an issue here. The public interest, the community interest, is pretty huge in having farmland, local farmland, or environmental preservation of these assets. And yet, hey, we understand here's a farmer who's worked hard all their life. They're being offered tons of money. What do we do? So they found a solution, and it was called transfer of development rights. And this is something I think that Sarasota County, it's a big area of improvement, because Sarasota County and our cities, or I live in the city, they talk a good game. But when it comes to actually implementing things like TDRs, transfer of development rights, I honestly haven't seen that they're really at the top of their game. What could they do? Well, they could deny this use. but they could say to the farmer, and based on this conflicting with the comprehensive plan, which requires compatibility, you know, which requires that a use has to be compatible with its surroundings. But they could offer that farmer, and we have money that we've set aside to do things like this. They could say, hey, listen, we're going to buy your land. We're going to buy the development rights. We're going to give you, we're going to purchase the development rights. It's still going to have to stay farmland, but you're going to realize your $1 million benefit. And in exchange, this piece of property cannot be developed, you know, to a high density intensity because the public interest is served by it remaining a farmland or remaining an environmental use, a park use. And that way, you're getting paid. The public is buying this from you, and the public gets the benefit, right?
Well, to the credit of both Gene and the Conservation Foundation, the owners were approached to do a conservation easement. That's basically what that is. And they were not willing participants in the conservation easement. They assured everyone they would never sell. And
I think it is a little different. A conservation, it's the same outcome. But anyway, Jonna, what are your thoughts too?
Well, this gets back to the fact that the county has signaled that this may be appropriate for higher density. I think the county would, if the owners only thought this was going to be ag land into the future, I think the county would be interested in either buying it fee simple and making it part of the celery fields or buying the development rights and letting them continue to do agriculture. But when the county sends a message saying you have this agricultural land, but we have a map that suggests it could have this many more units per acre, it's hard for the owner to say, well, I could sell it now for X amount, or if I just go through this process, if I can just survive the Planning Commission and the County Commission and get this increased density, it's going to be worth so much more. Well, at that point, the county's interest in buying it is going to be diminished because you end up paying for all this.
The price has gone up.
Yeah, the price has gone up.
By the county's own signal.
That's right.
But my answer would be, well, that was foolish, but so what? It's still worth it. It's still worth buying the TDRs, the development rights.
What the county has done then is when we buy environmental land, it has a certain potential for development. Mm-hmm. And so if we just extinguish those rights, so let's say, make this completely hypothetical. Let's say we buy a piece of property for the county for environmental purposes. Half the value is the land itself, and half the value is the development potential. If we extinguish
I'm going to disagree that you can divide that. I think that the development potential is always, you can't half it. But
well,
go ahead.
It gets divided. If we extinguish that development potential, it's essentially like if we paid $10 million for it, we just burned up $5 million. So what the county has done is said those development rights are available for transfer, and our environmental program continues to get money intermittently from the sale of those development rights. So theoretically, this property could be rezoned to a higher density. The county could buy it at a greatly inflated price and then put those units, make those units available to transfer elsewhere.
So are you saying it has to be rezoned before the county can purchase the development rights?
You know, I don't know
that's true.
I think there's a little bit of a, no, that's not the case on that. Yeah. I do think there's a little bit of a pickle at this point for the county to get involved with purchasing this land. Like, let's say the rezone doesn't go through.
I'm not talking about purchasing land.
Okay.
It's the development
rights. Just the development rights. So that is part of the conservation easement, is my understanding. I met with someone from the Parks Department, and they explained that they do buy development rights. And I think it's 60% of the property value. They can still sell that 40% that's left, like if they want to transfer it, sell it as a farm.
Right.
Correct. They can sell it as a farm.
Right.
And they would get 60% right away. Like, whatever the appraised value is. The problem is, the appraised value for this is somewhere around $5 million, and we think, this is an estimation, D.R. Horton's coming in around $8 million. So, it's not, They stand to make more money. I completely understand the family is doing what they're doing.
Of course.
100% understand that.
Of course,
yes.
You know, they want to see a profit. But just so the public understands, and I've been hearing, as long as I've been doing this work since 2008, I've been hearing about TDRs, Transfer of Development Rights, being used properly as a tool to put public land or put land into to solidify its use in a way that's consistent with the public interest. So what's in the public interest for that piece of property, I would argue, is it stays a farm or a park, either one, but not high density. Anonymous, an Evergreen member at the fan club level, thank you for your $20 donations. And you love Fogartyville, the Cat's Meow, Corduroy, my gosh, it's a list. Milo, After Hours. I can't really read it all, it's great.
All right.
Thank you, Anonymous, so much for your donation. Everybody, we're in the middle of our pledge drive. Please call 941-894-6469 to make your pledge. You can go online as well, wslr.org, and donate at any level. Please be generous if you can, whatever level you can be generous, we so appreciate it. So we're talking about the proposal to build 170 homes at the corner of Raymond Road and Palmer Boulevard, which is right smack in the celery fields, wetlands. It flooded 3 feet during the aftermath of Debbie. Is this a good idea? Sarah Reisinger and the Audubon Society?
No, it is not.
Yeah, it is not a good idea. And so we're just kicking around. How did we get here? What's the future for Sarasota? And the reality is the next 20, 30 years of storms certainly don't look like they're going to be the same as the last 20, 30 years. Have you guys looked at that, Sarah? You know, the forecast?
So we have not really. We think we should relook at the standard based on what we've seen this year, right? This year has been what we think is more typical for what would go forward, right? Mm-hmm. Like this year we're in La Nina. We have four storms that have come through that
maybe
are significant rainfall.
Your namesake storm.
Yes, my namesake storm could arrive this week.
Right. Can you believe this? Yeah. I've never seen a November hurricane. I've lived here 25 years.
Yeah. Technically there have been hurricanes in every month of the year, but they do try to keep them in a...
Yeah.
You know, we need to end the hurricane season so we can obsess about the legislative session.
It's too much. It's too much.
Yeah.
So going to the planning board, this is November 21st,
yes.
Right? It's next Thursday. And what time is that? Do you
5
know?
p.m. And if you want to do a presentation, if you are wanting to come and speak up, I would advise arriving early, especially if you have a presentation. You need to save it on a thumb drive. And you
Where
need
is
to,
this?
This is in Venice at the R.L. Anderson building, because I guess the building downtown has had some
issues.
Damage from the storm.
Yeah.
One thing we haven't touched on, I do want to touch on, is the traffic issue.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that.
Palmer, in general, because of all the development that has gone on out there, has increased in traffic significantly in the 10 years that I've been out there. Celery Fields is a bus stop to multiple schools, my daughter's school included. It's where county track meets are occurring.
Really?
Yeah,
oh,
for cross country.
Yeah.
Yes. We have training, like IMG is there very frequently with the kids training. It's not just a birding site. It is an exercise. It's a site that's enjoyed by everyone. But when you're adding, this is a very small two-lane road that we're talking about, Raymond Road. And they are suggesting that traffic would increase by 1,700 cars a day. And if you span that from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., you're looking at about 3 cars a minute. That's
Which
significant.
Is already clogged. See, back when the quads was an issue back in 2019 and putting industrial development at the four lots at Apex and Palmer. So that's the west side of the celery fields. We're talking now about
the east side.
But the roads the public input and information from the FDOT, the Florida Department of Transportation, 5 years ago was saying that these roads were F. They were failing roads. The yes. roads haven't changed, and the traffic's continuing to get worse. So they can't have, they're no better than the F that they were 5 years ago.
No.
And you're talking about more.
More
congestion.
In that exact area. And, mm-hmm. you know, the premier birding site for us is the Raymond Road Boardwalk.
That I
is
love that.
100
awesome.
Feet from where they're suggesting this development would be.
Mm-hmm.
So you have two exits to the development coming out onto tiny Raymond Road. We have school children on field trips walking down this road. We yeah. have birders with lots of equipment and cameras and binoculars and scopes walking
Some
down this road.
Making their living, right?
Yes.
Or they're professional photographers. So this has actually generated, you know, a segment of the arts.
Correct.
Right? In terms of the photography.
So, I highly recommend anyone follow the Celery Fields Facebook page. The
beautiful.
Photography that comes through there is incredible.
It's really beautiful. So to your point, the traffic is another reason that the county...
Well, and Celery Fields is a park that spans a road. That's not very common. You have to cross mm-hmm. Palmer Boulevard to get to the boardwalks and the rewilded mm-hmm. spaces from the parking lot. So we're asking people to cross and now a road that will now have 1,700 more cars on it. That is
yeah.
really unsafe.
Yeah. So, John, you've been watching development decisions for...
just a half century.
Were you on the planning board?
No.
How come? I wonder. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I know why. But,
yeah.
But you've been watching probably for 25 years.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
45 maybe, yeah.
45 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, John, we've been here before with the west side of the Celery Fields. And the county ultimately did the right thing. Tell me what your thoughts are. I don't really like the crystal ball, but I'm going to ask you, do you think we have a shot at the county doing the right thing here by the Celery Fields?
Yeah,
and
I think
saying no.
I think particularly in light of Debbie. I think we'll have to thank Debbie if this positive outcome. I think everything, all the concerns about how it should have been protected, how it shouldn't have been identified for higher density, that's all true.
Mm-hmm.
I think the potential impact on the wildlife is valid. But I think this angle of, when you're trying to develop a property where the wading bird's legs weren't long enough to reach the bottom.
Correct.
You've got a problem. So let me just say, once again, I know you're listening. You should be supporting the detail. The preferred level, the easiest level is the listener level. That's $40. And if you want some audience participation, get out your calculator and divide 40 by 365. It's about 10 cents a day
yeah.
to support this programming you're getting from Kathy Antunes. You're not going to find this on any other radio station. You can go to Tampa or any other station is not going to have this detailed analysis of what's happening with local politics. So please give.
Yeah, you know, thank you for that, Jono. And the thing is, when I started paying attention, because, of course, you know, national politics, state politics get so much bandwidth, right, and get so much attention. And I was really surprised and shocked in a way at how many really important decisions about the local economy, about the environment, just the level of awareness out there just wasn't that high, right? And so it is my privilege, right, to be able to do this for all of you. We're all volunteers here. We don't get paid to do this work, but we're passionate because we know this affects not just us, but it affects our children and their children. Sarah, Audubon is a beloved organization. How do, you know, to let people know how they can find you, you know, if they want to visit or in the virtual, you know, on the web, where do people go to learn more about Audubon?
So you can go to our website, sarasotaaudubon.org, and we have all of the information there. But I'd really love if people would come and see Celery Fields. We have a nature center there. We are open every day of the week, October 1st through May 31st. We have bird feeders, so you can see the Nande parakeets. We have naturalists on site. We're open 9 to noon. So Saturday, Sunday, if you're with your kids, please come out, or you're with the grandkids. During the week, if you're looking for a nice nature walk and to learn something new, please come see us. We can give you all sorts of information about what to look for, where to look for things. It's just such a great community resource, which is why I got involved in it. It's such a special place.
It is.
We're trying to rewild. We've talked about the quad parcels, but we are in the process of raising $5 million to rewild that area and put in a playground and pavilion and additional parking so that people can enjoy the space even more.
Which will be fantastic.
It would be great if we still have birds.
Yes. I want to thank Anonymous. You just became a radio activist at the 96.5, $96.50 level for songs, for knitting, and mayhem. We thank you so much for supporting WSLR. Getting to the nature of this show, the detail, decisions that impact us and that wear away at the fabric of our community happen one bad decision at a time, honestly. This is one of those pivot point decisions. This is an important decision. So this hearing for the Planning Commission is November 21st at 5 p.m. at the R.L. Anderson County Administration Building in Venice. Jono, can you tell people what they need to do at a Planning Commission if they're interested?
Well, you have to sign up to speak, so that's crucial. Get there early and fill out a card if you have... If you have any graphics you want to display, you should have printed copies of those. If you want to bring a thumb drive, you should get there early and talk with staff. You should, you'll probably have 3 minutes, I would imagine.
You should
really focus on factual material that is based on your personal experience. They're looking, in order to be able to turn this down, they would need substantial data and analysis that's factual and not simply, I've always loved this place and you have to save it. That's all true, but legally they're looking for something more.
Yeah, it's kind of like witness testimony.
Yeah.
And if you live near there and you can talk about the impacts on your own property, that's compelling. If you use that facility as a member of the public and you talk about the impacts of deterioration of that facility, these things really matter. Your voice is important. The public voice has been a huge factor in preserving the facility and the Celery Fields in the past. So Sarah Reisinger, thank you so much for the work that you do. Without organizations like Audubon, we'd all be much poorer as a community. Really, you bring, like I said, you know, these environmental assets are kind of the Rondi Dangerfield of Sarasota's tourism portfolio. They don't get enough respect, but we love them, and thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be able to talk about this.
I'm so glad. And Jono Miller, I think you're one of the respected Mac Daddies of environmental activism here in Sarasota County. You've got the institutional knowledge. I always learn from you.
Well,
thank you.
You know, I've been here twice as long as you have, and I think you've got twice as much done in terms of helping the public understand what's going on with local government.
I don't know about that, but thank you. They always give us something to talk about, right, Jono?
Yes.
There's always more to learn. And I want to thank you, our listeners. None of this matters without your help. Please go to WSLR.org or call the station 941-894-6469. If you appreciate WSLR, we need your support. And we're doing this for you. Be sure to stay tuned for more local affairs programming here on WSLR Public Affairs Programming. Have a great day.
where you been so long? Tell me, Corina, where you been so long? Ain't had no loving since you've been gone. Oh, Corina.
First of Democracy Now!, you're listening to WSLR-LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV-LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I don't care if it takes every second of our time and every ounce of our energy. We either get this government back on our side or we defund and get rid of, abolish the FBI, CDC, ATF, DOJ, every last one of them, if they do not come to heel.
Donald Trump has picked far-right Congressman Matt Gaetz to be his attorney general, who would head the Department of Justice, which Gaetz once wanted abolished. The nomination shocked many in Washington, in part because Gaetz himself was the target of a DOJ sex trafficking investigation and was still under a House ethics probe that ended only yesterday when Gaetz resigned from Congress before a highly damaging report comes out. We'll look at his nomination and the growing fear Trump will weaponize the department to go after political enemies. Then to Gaza, as a special UN committee says Israel's actions are, quote, consistent with the characteristics of genocide. And a federal judge in Virginia has ordered the U.S. military contractor CACI to pay $42 million to three Iraqi men